Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's season 7 and episode 58, and it's Ravens Week. And first of all, Dave, a Merry Christmas to you and all our listeners. Hope everybody has a wonderful holiday, and certainly under the tree, Steeler fans will be looking for a big W.
Yeah, and happy Immaculate Reception Day and happy Festivus Day to everybody as well, too. Hard to believe, 44 years ago today, the Immaculate Reception era. It never gets old going back and watching, you know, especially the NBC broadcast of that. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, supposedly Frenchie Fuqua has in a sealed envelope for his one of his offspring to open, you know, after his death, what really happened on that play. But it never gets old, and quite a time of year to celebrate that right before Christmas every year.
Absolutely. And it should be a good one. Of course, the slate of games will be taking place. The largest part of the NFL schedule will be taking place on Saturday. And we'll certainly see what happens in terms of impacts of other games on the Steelers. The Dolphins game impacts things. What happens to the AFC West teams obviously impacts things. We'll see what happens with the Bills. But I mean, the Bills-Dolphins is a huge game. And, of course, the Steelers kicking off at 4:30 on Sunday. So, Dave, the big news is the injury report. And, unfortunately for the Steelers, Sammy Coates was added to the injury report yesterday, and he was listed as limited, which basically means this. It means he practiced like he normally would, and then he got hurt. And if the reports coming out are true that he tweaked his hamstring, this is a bad sign, because not only does it mean he's not going to play on Sunday, it means he's, you know, won't be ready next week. And, you know, the hamstrings are typically 2 to 4 week types of things if they happen on a Sunday. So this is happening on a Thursday, and, you know, he's put the rest of his season in jeopardy if it's a hamstring pull. Now, we don't know the extent of it. Aditi Kinkabwala said he walked off the field. He was not happy, as you might imagine. So another addition to the injury report, and it certainly looks like no Stephon Tuitt and no Ladarius Green.
Yeah, we'll have to see for sure. And is it okay to talk about Sammy Coates when he's injured? We get several emails, people saying they're tired of us talking about Sammy Coates, but at the same time, get some comments here and there, you know, in some other threads when we write about him. So, you know, we'll wait and see. My biggest takeaway from Sammy Coates injuring his hamstring is, what have the Steelers really lost? You know, because this is a guy that, yeah, he played 30-something snaps in the game this past week against the Cincinnati Bengals. How much did that really help in opening things up? You know, it's really kind of hard to say. He was targeted, I think, 4 times in that game. Of course, he only had the 1 catch for 10 yards. You go back and look at how many times Sammy Coates has been targeted deep down the field since week 5 and has 0 catches during that time, since week 5. In fact, 2 catches for 14 yards in total. You know, that's not what you need. And I know Todd Haley came out and said this past week that it looks like Sammy Coates is gaining confidence, yada, 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 needs to make big plays. And by big plays, it doesn't have to be 30 or 40 yarders and all like that. That's bull crap. You need some 30 or 40 yarders. That's what Sammy Coates is there to do. That's what Sammy Coates did at Auburn. And, you know, the fact that he's not there, who knows? You know, we'll see what happens on Friday, and then we'll also look and see what happens with a guy like Darius Heyward-Bey. And, you know, being limited twice this week, I guess there's some optimism there, but I kind of
He's not going. Yeah, I don't think he's going.
I kind of view this as a ramp up week, if you will. In other words, if he gets through this week, okay, then he'll go more full next week and then be ready to go. You got to remember, this is a guy that's missed a lot of times since week 9, so I'm not optimistic about him playing. You know, Ricardo Matthews limited both days this week. Anthony Ciccolo limited on Thursday after not practicing on Wednesday. Mike gave us a heads up on both those players on Tuesday that would be the case. So I'm not overly concerned about Ciccolo or Ricardo Matthews. D'Angelo Williams has gone full twice this week. Assuming he goes full on Friday, I see no reason why he doesn't return to the field for the first time since week 9. Stephon Tuitt doesn't look good. Same with Shemarco, Ladarius Green, and Justin Gilbert was added as did not practice on Thursday because of an illness. I would suspect as long as he's able to go on Friday that he'll dress. So that's it in a nutshell. And if you have a guy like Stephon Tuitt not play, we'll see what happens on Saturday. Will a guy like Johnny Maxey be promoted from the practice squad? Look, it's either going to be him or Keshad Lyons. There was a report earlier this week that Johnny Maxey was the one receiving first team reps, so you know it could be him. And then also you'd have to think if a guy like Sammy Coates is unable to go along with Darius Heyward-Bey, DeMarcus Harris probably gets a helmet for the first time during his career.
Right, and if Maxey comes up, Daryl Richardson's the obvious guy to move off the 53-man roster with D'Angelo Williams back. No need to have four running backs, so he would be unlikely to dress. So that would be the move to look for on Saturday. I'm with you on all of that. And, Dave, now the question becomes, you know, I've said all along when D. Will comes back, he's just an insurance policy. But without Sammy Coates, we may see more of the Le'Veon Bell split wide type of situation where maybe he gets 10 or 15 – opportunities as a slot receiver, and D'Angelo Williams is in the backfield. So good time for him to be getting healthy with Sammy Coates out, and maybe instead of me thinking that he'd touch the ball maybe once or twice just after, you know, Bell has a long run or something along those lines, he actually might get to play a little bit if they decide to use Bell more as a receiver in this one.
I'd like to see D'Angelo, you know, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago as well, too, whenever he's healthy, to get him, get Le'Veon off as much as you can. Now, obviously, he's your best player, but D'Angelo can do a lot of the things, you know, with the football not in hands that Le'Veon can do. He's an excellent blocker. I think he's very smart. He can catch the ball out of the backfield as well, too. So, you know, can you get a guy like D'Angelo Williams 8 or 9 snaps in this game? I think so, and I think you can do so at the same time and we've seen him do it before with having both running backs on the field here. You know, there you go back, David, and you look at this game against the Ravens way back in week 9. It feels like it happened week 9 of 2015 now. And I wrote about this earlier in the week. Do you realize how all the changes that have taken place or the differences, I should say, from that week 9 game to this week? For starters, remember Marquise Pouncey was out of that game essentially after the first couple of snaps. Now, he played 19 snaps in the game, but it wasn't the same Marquise Pouncey after dislocating a thumb in that game. They were without the services of Roosevelt Nix in that game as well, too. A lot of people forget that Roosevelt Nix, you know, missed that game because of the back problem there. So that's going to be a big difference. We'll see what happens with Ladarius Green. Obviously, they didn't have Ladarius Green in that game against the Ravens there. Remember, Marcus Gilbert was just returning from that ankle injury, right, in this game as well, too. And we haven't even gotten to the defensive side of football with all the things that have changed. Sure, they've lost Stephon Tuitt since that time, but look at all the changes. You know, you got Artie Burns, who had made his first start in that game against the Ravens. He's made several more starts since then. You have Sean Davis as a starter now. You have Javon Hargrave. Great playing a significant amount of snaps. If memory serves me, Ryan Shazier, that was really his first full game back from the knee injury that he had suffered earlier in the season, and on and on and on. I mean, just so many changes. This really is a totally different Steelers team this time around than it was from week nine.
Yeah, it'd be a big benefit, obviously, if they had all these guys. But here they go, and it looks, you know, Dave, we've talked about these two guys and more significant loss, you know, hard to tell. The Steelers did manage to sort things out in the game against the Bengals without Stephon Tuitt in that defensive line. They managed to kind of, after the first quarter and a half, to shore up against the run game. Obviously, you know, as Keith talked about extensively, it's a lot easier to play good defense when you don't actually have to be on the field. They only were on the field for 9 minutes in that second half as the Steelers possessed the ball for 21. So that'll be the challenge, you know, and then adding Sammy Coates into the mix as well. Just overall, Dave, this is a game where I think they've got to come out, and I would approach it a little bit like they did the Buffalo game. I'd be coming out looking to pass the ball to set up the run early and then see how things work from there. Baltimore is obviously a good run-stopping team, although they haven't been quite as stout lately as they were earlier. But without Jimmy Smith in that secondary, you got to think that they're going to come out looking to air it out. And without a lot of depth at receiver, it means Eli Rogers and Kobe Hamilton. And, you know, whether it's Jesse James or Xavier Grimble, they're going to be involved in the game. But I would expect to, you know, air it up early and often.
You know, you just mentioned a name there that I haven't been high on this year, but I mean, he has been around this team all year. This will be if Ladarius Green does not play against the Ravens, this could be a big opportunity for Xavier Grimble. It really, really can. This late in the season, there's absolutely no reason for him not to understand that offense and what to look for. He played in that first game against the Ravens as well, too. He should know what he's looking at on the other side of the field. So, you know, yes, it is pretty big that you don't have a guy like Ladarius Green, but you do have kind of a poor man's Ladarius Green in Xavier Grimble, and I hate to use the pun here, but he could be the X factor, you know? I really think he can, and I look for Ben Roethlisberger to hook up with him, target him three or four times in this game. Let me ask you this. Would you rather have Stephon Tuitt in this game for the Steelers, and if you could, the Ravens could have Jimmy Smith, or are you fine with the trade-off of losing Stephon Tuitt for and the Ravens not having Jimmy Smith, or as Mike Tomlin would say, Jimmy Smith?
I thought you were going to ask me which side's a bigger loss, Ladarius Green or Stephon Tuitt.
Or you can answer that too. Answer both of them.
Well, I think I've come to kind of trust this defense a little bit, and as good as Tuitt's been over the last, you know, 8 or 10 weeks, I think I'd rather have Ladarius Green and add another weapon, and particularly, again, if you add in the loss of Sammy Coates, even though, as you correctly point out, he has not brought much to the table in 10 weeks. So, you know, what are you really losing? You're losing the potential that Sammy Coates brings. You're not losing the productivity that he has brought. So I guess I would say Green over Tuitt, but if somebody wanted to argue the other side, I got no problem with that. And no, I think losing Jimmy Smith is a big deal for them. So if you said, you know, take two guys off the field, I'd say go ahead and take them off.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'll even throw it. I mean, I guess you just took it to that. Let me just clarify. Would you gladly trade not having Tuitt and Green for them not having Jimmy Smith?
No. No, not both of them.
it's interesting. Knowing what we know now, right now, as we sit here with this defense, it does make you give a little pause, though, especially what we saw in the game against the Bengals there. Look, I mean, Tuitt is a very disruptive player, and it's hard to bargain off a trade-off with any player whatsoever there. But Jimmy Smith's a huge loss for them. They're going to have to play Sharice Wright and Tavon Young. And look, Sharice Wright has not been good at points during this season. He's missed a couple of games with an injury to boot. And whoever the Ravens are going to have to make sure, not that they weren't anyway, but they really going to have to pay a lot of attention to Antonio Brown in this game, and it might not even be enough. I think because of that, you're going to see some very tasty matchups for a guy like Eli Rogers, for potentially a guy like for Xavier Grimble, and whoever you know lines up on the other side out wide as well too. Maybe Kobe Hamilton gets a few nice matchups in this game as well too. Boy, you go back and you watch that route that Eli Rogers ran on that touchdown against the Bengals. That's the type of stuff that you want to see. I mean, that is exactly the type of stuff that you want to see. And one of my writers, Daniel, wrote about this, I believe, on yesterday. We want to start seeing a more complete game from Eli Rogers. You know, we don't want to see him disappear in second halves of close ball games. Now, of course, that works. You know, there's multiple layers to that. You know, Ben Roethlisberger's got to look his way too. But you know, I think because of them not having Jimmy Smith, if I'm Roethlisberger and Brown and Eli Rogers and Le'Veon Bell, I really am licking my lips right now.
Yeah, I mean, hard for me to put. It's not as if you look at Eli Rogers' numbers and it's generally based on targets. He's catching, you know, the normal percentage of balls thrown his way. So, some of it, maybe he's not able to get open, or maybe Ben's just not seeing him or targeting him enough. You know, we've seen plenty of times over the course of the season where he's been open and Ben has chosen to go other directions. But, yeah, nice to see him have a 7-catch, 115-yard day with a touchdown. That would go a long way to making sure the Steelers win this game. So, Dave, you know, we know what the Steelers look to do offensively against this defense. What are the Ravens going to do? I mean, they've become a passing team. They're a different team than, you know, the typical Raven teams that we see. They've got guys to throw to. When you think about the targets and Smith and Perriman and the guys out of the backfield and Pitta, you know, they've got Mike Wallace. You know, they've got guys who are skilled players. And you could argue that the talent that they're using to catch the ball is, you know, they don't have the high-end guy in Antonio Brown, but their depth is better. They're better at the tight end position. They're probably better at the number two receiver position right now. And it's going to be, incumbent upon the Steelers defense to pressure Flacco. Keeping him in the pocket won't be a huge problem, but get after him, make him make quicker decisions.
I tell you, it's quite amazing when you go back and look at what Flacco has done on third and long situations this year. Not very good at all. And normally when you think of third and long, you think of third and seven or more. Really, you look at his numbers, third and six and more haven't been great at all. I think he's 10 of his completed passes have moved the chains on third and six or more so far this season. On the road, let me clarify that, on the road. And Flacco's splits have been noticeably different. In fact, for all the grief that we've been giving Ben Roethlisberger about his play on the road this year, if you look at the raw adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat for Roethlisberger and Flacco on the road this year, Flacco's is lower. They're both in, you know, they're both not great. They're both in the low five range, but I think Flacco's is something like 5.05 or something along those lines. So for as bad as anybody wants to say Roethlisberger's been on the road this year, you can point the finger right back at Flacco as well too. I think the scariest part of their offense is not so much running the football with Terrence West, but with what they've been able to do lately with Kenneth Dixon, it reminds you back to a few years ago when they had Forsett and the capabilities of this offensive line. Can their offensive line run the outside zone against the Steelers, and can the Steelers be able? Are the Steelers able to defend it? We saw the Bengals try to run that outside zone against the Steelers this past Sunday and had zero success with it, especially in the second half there. Dixon is a guy that kind of concerns me, as does Dennis Pitta. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did they have Dennis Pitta in that first game against the Steelers?
Did not, if I remember correctly.
Right. This is a guy that Flacco likes to go to on third down. Look, I mean, you go back and you look at the play of that Steelers defense in this first game against the Ravens, and even though we talked about how many moving parts have kind of changed since then, that's a Steelers defense that played pretty decent, right? You know, we talked about the 95-yard touchdown off the slant that probably should have only gone for 18 or 20 yards. We talk about, and really not a lot, you know, the other Steve Smith explosive play that they had, it was really a blown coverage of Sean Davis, I think, not lining up in the right spot. If you remember on that play, Steve Smith, free release, nobody really covering him, and everybody want to say, well, that's on Lawrence Timmons on that play. Really, no, I don't think it was. I think that was a lot of Sean Davis not lining up on the right place in that one as well too. That's, you know, don't forget that one of those touchdowns in that first meeting was a blocked punt. You know, so the Steelers effectively, what, gave up 15 points, I think, when you add in the two-point conversion. Not a bad performance at all, and this is a Steelers defense that should be better this time around as well, too. One thing I really look forward to, David, in this matchup, Ronnie Stanley has been getting a lot of praise these last couple of weeks, okay? And I've gone back and looked at the tape. I thought he's played well. I think James Harrison's going to have a big day against Ronnie Stanley in this game. And I think James is going to make a key play or two in this game. I'm not overly impressed. I've never been a huge Ricky Wagner fan at right tackle. So this is, you know, you look at the other side. Bud Dupree should be able to get, you know, get a pressure or two on Ricky Wagner in this game as well, too. I guess the only other thing about that offense that kind of scares me is how they use Kyle Juszczyk, that fullback there. They'll use him, you know, as a H-back, as kind of a tight end, and as a straight fullback, and not afraid to feed him the football there. So, look, I you know, a lot of weapons on paper here, but I think the Steelers' defense actually matches up better this time around than they did the first time around.
Yep. You know, as Mike says, you get experience. You know, it's nice to get experience, nice to learn while you win. And obviously the Steelers have been doing that over the last 5 weeks. So that's the setup. Excuse me, Dave.
Bless you. What's your number one turnovers?
The only way the Steelers lose this game is if they lose the turnover battle significantly. I think if 3-0, 3-1 on turnovers, Steelers, that's how the Steelers lose the game.
All right. Well, what's your number one concern about the Steelers' defense in not producing a turnover?
If for some reason they weren't able to get pressure on Flacco would be the biggest thing. I think if they get pressure on Flacco and limit what he can do, I expect, you know, really in this game, maybe – I was, you know, as I've said, I was more concerned about the Bengals on the road than the Ravens at home, and the Steelers were able to get the win there. I've managed to block that first half against Miami out of my mind, and I just don't think the Ravens are that good. Now, if they played like they did in the first half against Miami or in that game against Miami, you know, maybe that offense can do things. But they haven't done it all year. They haven't been great on the road. I don't know why all of a sudden – no, it's a big game, but I don't know why all of a sudden it would happen this week. So if the Steelers don't beat themselves, I think they win this game.
How big a difference do you think a guy like Roosevelt Nix can potentially make in this game? And let me know what you think about how much of that game plan in that first half the last time against the Ravens – how much did Roethlisberger, that being his first game back, played a role in that?
Well, you know, I've said this a couple times. I think that was the worst coaching that we've seen this year, and I can't speak to the injury in terms of either Ben not checking out of stuff or the Steelers just not wanting him to check out of stuff. Anybody who points to that saying it's his first game back still has to recognize that in the fourth quarter of that game, he lit him up. And, you know, he threw for a ton of yards, and he threw on the run. You know, he threw that fourth quarter touchdown pass on the run to Antonio Brown. So either, you know, they didn't recognize that he was as capable as he was, or they were just way, 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 way too slow to, you know, change the game plan that they had worked on all week. Now, we saw them, you know, I think, change the game plan a bit in Buffalo, a little bit maybe because of weather conditions, but also because what they were able to do against the Bills, they just had to recognize that they were, you know, they were able to run the ball almost at will. So this game, again, I think they're not going to abandon the run, but I think you throw to set up the pass. And yes, it would be certainly nice to have Rosie Nixon there. I don't think they were using much of Chris Hubbard at that point in time as a tackle eligible. So I expect to see, even though he didn't have a great game against the Bengals, I expect to see him in there a fair bit as well. And as you pointed out, look, Kobe Hamilton and Eli Rogers and Xavier Grimble, these guys need to help. And it's my expectations for Sammy Coates, to be honest with you, are bad. I don't know that we'll see Sammy Coates unless the Steelers get to the AFC Championship game. And because if he came off with a hamstring pull, you know, that could be what we saw with Cam Hayward, and he's a defensive end, that he missed a couple weeks. You know, Sammy having it happen at the end of the week. Nobody plays against Cleveland. If the Steelers win, he's probably not ready to go for the wild card game, and then we're just guessing after that. But that's you're going to get Hayward Bay back. I've said all along that I expect, you know, the target for him was the last week of the season. So hopefully he's back for that, and that fills that void. But interesting stuff here with these injuries, and you certainly, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but we certainly hope, well, the Steelers get the win, then nobody cares about the injury report next week. And then you're just looking forward to, you know, whether you're playing the Ravens again or what. But, it felt like the Steelers were getting really healthy as they got toward the Bengals game. And now it doesn't feel like they're as healthy, obviously, as they were.
Well, like I said about Sammy, it's such a frustrating thing there. But, now, I mean, like I said, what have you really lost? I would and obviously with not having Ladarius Green, who's provided you quite a few, double explosive plays, or 30-yard variety type of plays there. Even Roethlisberger this past week admitted that the two players aren't really, totally on the same page yet. You know, going back to one of those early third down plays in that game against the Bengals, where he really expected Sammy Coates to get upfield a little bit quicker than he actually did there. You know, outside of Tuitt right now, I mean, Tuitt obviously is a big injury. I can kind of stomach what has happened here, with the rest of the injury report. My biggest concern when you look at this Ravens defense is boy, that inside linebacker tandem of C.J. Mosley and Zach Orr can really, really cover a lot of ground. And boy, Brandon Williams is just, he's been one of my favorite players for a few years now. So Eric Weddle is a couple more games into being smarter and knowing where to be on the field in that defense there. But even a guy like Eric Weddle is not going to be able to cover all the deficiency. I don't think of that defense. I think the Ravens are going to have to play a lot of two man deep in this game. And if they play a lot of two man deep in this game, the Steelers have got to find a way to be able to run the football, and they've got to be able to find a way to kind of widen those safeties and exploit the middle of the field, or get some of those turkey shots that Ben Roethlisberger likes to. And we saw even Eli Manning try to turkey hole shots, down the outside, 15, 20 yards down the field. In that game last night that he connected with, he went to the well one too early on one of those, and Malcolm Jenkins baited him into it. But that's where Roethlisberger is going to have to hit if they play quite a few two men as well. This is a Steelers defense, even without Ladarius Green, that should have the receiving threats to exploit a defense such as that.
Okay. Hey, Steeler fans. Mortgage rates are near all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or just refinance, contact our buddy Craig Octane at First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig Octane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, we haven't talked much around the NFL about what's going on. We touched on the Pro Bowl. Anything you want to add about the Pro Bowl stuff? We talked about DeCastro and Ben and their situation. I think the other three guys were straightforward. I felt like we reviewed the defense. I really thought, looking at the Pro Bowl selections, that they did a really good job in the AFC.
Is there a better way to improve the process? And what the fans get a third, the coaches get a third, and the players get a third, right? Am I missing something there?
I stopped looking at how they do it, but the fact that they got it right for a change, mostly right, I think is pretty good.
Your big names are always going to dominate as long as those guys stay healthy. For the most part, when you come to the poor Marcus Gilbert, is he ever going to get in?
No, he's not. You have to be a clear dominant right tackle, and as good as Gilbert's been, I'm not sure he's recognized as that. And there's the way they do it now with it back to the conferences, you're only going to have three tackles, so you're going to have three left tackles. It's just the way it's going to be.
But Gilbert has been fairly dominant, though. The problem is he missed some games, right? Is that what it boils down to? If you're not a named guy and you miss games, you have no shot. Basically.
Yeah, he's not a named guy in the league. It's just he's not. So until that changes, he's not going to get named, almost regardless of how he plays.
Mike Mitchell.
He's the third guy on that line. That's the other problem. They're not just going to. Third guy in the Cowboys line has trouble making it too. So you can be really good, but if it's perceived that you got DeCastro next to you and you got Pouncey next to him and they're the two best guys on the line, awfully tough.
Yeah, and if Shazier keeps missing games, Shazier's going to have to dominate on the stat sheet, plain and simple, by the time the voting's done. That means, in other words, 12 games into the season, he's going to have to be near the league near the league lead in total tackles and tackles for loss. He's going to have a couple forced fumbles and a couple interceptions. That's the only way I think he's going to get in. Moving forward. He's a dominant guy when he's on the field. How many times do we have to keep saying that? But the problem is he's not on the field consistently, and especially during the robust time of the All-Pro voting. But, yeah, Pro Bowl, Smo Bowl, right?
Yeah, who cares?
All-Pro, I tend to like to talk about that a little bit more, but there's even some bonehead – how do you leave a guy like how is Antonio Brown when you don't get all 49 or all 50 of the
field? That was all pro. That was all pro.
Right, right. But they're continuing.
Unanimous is the word you're
there
looking.
There you go. Unanimous. How does a guy like that not get unanimous? There's always that one writer that. I think he does it just to get people to talk about him. But regardless, I tend to put more weight into All Pro than I do Pro Bowl.
Oh yeah, no, the All Pro's the real deal. They rarely miss on that stuff. So that's the big deal. And obviously, you're culling the list even further. So Antonio Brown will be All Pro. Le'Veon Bell will be All Pro. It'd be interesting though, because as we were talking about, if you got three backs as All Pro, David Johnson, Zeke Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, one of them is not going to be first team all pro. So my guess, I'm not going to guess because I think David Johnson's going to make it. And if you're picking between Bell and Zeke, I realize why, people listen to this podcast automatically think it should be Le'Veon Bell, but because he missed three games due to suspension, he may end up being second team.
Yeah. That David Johnson is fun to watch too. Right. And Zeke is for that matter. All three of those guys are currently the tops in the league right now. And you could interchange them for various different reasons, how they play with the football, out of their hand and so forth and so on. But, who's the Steelers, rookie of the year?
I guess I don't look at this the same way I guess most people have. I just this, and again, let's say that all three of these guys have contributed and had good seasons, and I think all three have lived up to expectations, if not much more than that, if not significantly more than that is what I mean. So if whoever you want to pick, fine. I don't have a real problem with it, but I think it's Sean Davis is one, and Artie's a close second, and Hargrave's clearly three in my mind. I know Kiper picked Hargrave. I think it'll be announced, you know, maybe today by the writers, because I think this is the week they do that stuff. But I thought it actually would have been earlier this week. So we'll see, but that's the way I would go.
I had a reader / listener email me this question this week, and I responded back to him. I told him who I thought will win it, and I think who will win it will be Artie Burns, but I think who probably deserves to win it is Sean Davis, to be quite honest with you. Artie is going to win it, I think, because of the three interceptions and the 12 passes defense to go along with the 49 tackles. He's got the stats that you can look at and touch and feel, you know, in my opinion. Now, Sean Davis, remember, Sean Davis has really logged more playing time. And I think Sean's play has gotten noticeably better on tape as the weeks have progressed. And, you know, let's not forget, he's got an interception. He has 53 total tackles. He's fourth on the team, David. Fourth on the team in total tackles right now. Half a sack. What did I say? Two tackles for loss, a quarterback hit, 13, or I'm sorry, three passes defense as well, too. He shows up noticeably on the all-22. Not that a guy like Javon Hargrave doesn't, but Javon Hargrave, being a defensive lineman, isn't really going to make a lot more plays. A lot of his stuff will have to be stuff that you kind of pick out on film. So I think Artie wins it because he is a first-round pick and because he does have those three interceptions. But if I was voting on this, I think Sean Davis deserves the Rookie of the Year award.
Yeah, for Javon Hargrave to get any recognition going forward, it's going to be the Casey Hampton type of thing. It's going to be Brandon Williams type of thing. You have to have the best run defense, one of the best run defenses in the league. And the Steelers have gotten a lot better. But like I said on Wednesday, it's going to, you know, the Steelers defense needs to do well in the playoffs, and then come into the season with a perception that they're good. And I think we'll come into next season with a different perception of the Steelers defense for the first time in 5 years. That if they're healthy, they add a piece through the draft or free agency, add maybe one player. You say, okay, wow, look at this defense now. You got your two ends. You got, you know who your nose tackle is. You got your inside backers, whomever is next to Shazier. You got Bud Dupree on one side. Your secondary is set and deep. You say, all of a sudden, this is a, you know, they're going to come into the season next year as a perceived to be a very good defense. You see, it would be shocking to me if the Steelers weren't again perceived with the Patriots as, you know, the dominant teams in the AFC coming into this offseason, because they're going to have another, you know, whatever happens with Sammy Coates, he's going to be coming back. He's under contract. The likelihood, I guess, is leaning toward Martavis Bryant will be back. That's a freebie with immense talent. And then you've got everybody else. So the offensive line's all under contract. They've got experience. You get Ladarius Green for a whole year. Now, of course, somebody's likely to get hurt along the way, but if we want to just kind of look down the horizon here, what this looks like for a Steelers team in 2017, Merry Christmas, because if they're able to stay healthy and, you know, add a Martavis Bryant piece, add a draft choice, you know, maybe a guy in free agency, they're not going to lose a lot. You know, you talk about losing Jarvis Jones now. Well, that's a zero because he's not even playing anymore. You get a whole year of Ladarius Green. Hopefully you get a whole year of Bell, and then also throw in whatever you think of them. And it's hard to have much of an opinion, but you do get another second-round draft pick in Senquez Golson. So when you're adding Bryant and Golson, that makes the draft a lot better if you count those two guys.
And don't forget, you get Cameron Hayward, hopefully healthy Cameron Hayward, back next year. And say what you will. I mean, look, I thought Cameron Hayward was – even though he suffered the ankle injury at the during the preseason, he may not have been 100%.
Right. He was dinged up. That's right. We figured I think we counted you and I earlier in the year and said he probably played, you know, two and a half games healthy.
Right. And then, you know, even though I don't want to use, you know, like Mike Tomlin, you don't want to use any of those as excuses. And I don't think I could have picked out notable, it being that noticeable with the ankle in the first couple of games there. Now, he suffered the hamstring injury in the game against the Jets. That obviously sidelined him. Then you get him back, and then boom, he's gone with the triceps or pectoral muscle, whatever it was that he tore several weeks ago as well, too. True or false, David? You can make an argument, and we sort of just did, but I just want to hear it out of your mouth. True or false, you can make an argument that all three of these top three draft picks are in the talk for Rookie of the Year.
NFL Rookie of the Year?
No, Steelers Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, we just had the conversation. I mean,
okay.
Look, I think it's unlikely Hargrave gets it, but sure. I mean, you can make a case for him.
Okay, I just wanted to reestablish that. True or false, David? After the draft, you imagined we'd have a discussion that all three would be in talk for Steelers Rookie of the Year.
True.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yeah, I did. I expected all three. You go back and listen to the tape. I expected Hargrave to get the most snaps, but all three guys to play.
Yeah, I mean, with the quality of play, I mean, you...
I think they've, you know, come on really well the second half of the year. I mean, I think I was higher on Artie than people at the beginning of the season. But Sean Davis from the get-go, you know, I liked what he did. I'm not going to blame the Steelers on anything they did here because it's worked out well. But I certainly, having him have to play nickel out of necessity was fine. And having to play some corner out of necessity is fine. And maybe in the big picture, that will help his overall development. I was just surprised they sat him for that whole Kansas City game. But look, live and learn. He didn't have a whole week of practice and he changed positions. And I give Mike, because I think ultimately it's Mike's call, but, you know, Carnell Lake and Keith Butler, a lot of credit. Fairly enough, were critical of Carnell Lake last year and the beginning of this year. And he's a guy who hasn't gotten any credit, or I haven't heard much of him get much credit for the improvement of these guys, but they made the decision to put him in the starting lineup, and that's been a positive for the Steelers defense.
Coming out of the draft, I was of those three players, I was obviously higher on Javon Hargrave first and foremost. I really, really liked his skill set, watching what limited tape was out there at South Carolina State, and then knowing the situation with Steve McClendon being gone and you know, that kind of thing. You could tell that and being as how Daniel McCullers really hadn't, you know, developed, you know, much during his first couple of years in, you could kind of see that Hargrave was going to get an opportunity to get some snaps. Now, did I ever imagine that he'd wind up probably getting the amount of snaps and playing in sub-package as much as he's had? No. So that's been a pleasant surprise in and of itself. Second on that list for me, as far as being most excited, would have been Sean Davis, okay? Now, with that said, you know, being as how they had Golden, you know, getting extended and all like that, you kind of wondered how long it was going to take. You knew Sean Davis was going to get on the field at some point, but you kind of wondered how quick was he going to get on the field. And they got him on the field mighty quick, even after, you know, the slot work there. So I was a bit surprised about that. And then, boy, I mean, pleasantly surprised with how fast, you know, talking about, you know, how good and how he's showing up on tape right now. And then third on that list was obviously Artie Burns, because this was such a raw kid. Now they're you know, Mike Wallace throwing out comparisons to Ike Taylor and all like that. Yeah, that and I wrote about it. Looks great on a quote sheet and all like that, but let's kind of temper that just yet. Has Artie made a tremendous progress since early on in the year to right now? Tremendous might be a little stretching a little bit, but I mean, it's noticeable progress to say the least. You know,
I think the fair thing to say is you and I are both surprised that he displaced Will Gay. And we expected him to be on the field in nickel, but I'm not sure when they made the move that I expected him at the halfway point of the season to displace Will Gay.
Yeah, no way. Look, I mean, barring injury and all that kind of disclaimer and everything, he's playing a whole heck of a lot more than I thought he would. Now, obviously, this point of the season now, you would hope these kind of, you know, these young players are getting on the field. But look, how many years was it status quo for Steelers rookies just to, you know, pretty much not play, until late in the season at best? And so you really got to take your hat off and hand it to what Colbert has done, because I didn't imagine the top three guys in this draft would be A, playing as much as they have been, and B, playing as well as they have been, right now, at this point of the season. So props to Colbert on that. And David, is there any, with the job that Keith Butler's done, I mean, is any talk, an assistant coach job of the, award of the year? I mean, how much credit does this guy deserve right now? Or does he does he deserve as much as a guy like Tomlin?
Well, they all deserve credit. This is one of the things from the outside that every year we talk about. It's always very hard to evaluate assistant coaches. I mean, nobody from the Steelers is going to get any awards for their unit performing, significantly, great. You look at teams like Tennessee or Tampa Bay or Oakland or whomever. When the perception is every season that you're expected to be very good, and we thought all along this was a 10, 11, 12 win team. When you go out and you kind of achieve that, you're just doing your job. So no awards, but lots of credit around. And again, it comes back to the fact that Mike Tomlin, in his 10th season, if the Steelers win one of these two games, will now have gone, 6-2 in seven of them. And to me, that's coaching. We can talk about, why some of those seasons they've started as slow as they have. But the fact of the matter is, as he says every year, we're not a finished product on the first game of the season. We expect to get better every week. Some of this has been schedule sequencing, and I've banged on this hard, particularly when looking at the Ravens. The Ravens played their last two games on the road. They're not as nearly as good a road team as they are a home team. They're averaging 28 points. They're averaging, 28 points a game at home and 18 on the road. That's significantly different. The Steelers have already played all their road games, so they're finished with two at home. The Ravens got the Browns twice early. The Steelers get the Browns twice late. The Steelers got the Pats and the Cowboys before the Ravens did. So when we were looking at the schedules and the records, people just look at the records and say, okay, but if you think how the schedules were laid out for these two teams in this one season, it was front-loaded positively for the Ravens, and it's a little back-loaded positively for the Steelers. So I think the Steelers are the better team. They're at home in this game. Both teams are a little dinged up, but if you're a good football team, you win this game to get in the playoffs, and it's that simple. If the Ravens win the game, then we'll reevaluate. Or I'll reevaluate what I think of the Ravens. But I think the Steelers are a good football team. I've thought that all season long. They didn't play well for a stretch there. But I think they are a Super Bowl-capable team. I think right now New England's a better team. But I think the Steelers are the second-best team in the AFC, and I fully expect them to win on Sunday.
I lost my train of thought there. What else we got to talk about? Any other news here? I just lost my train of thought. I was looking at the schedule, trying to remember. I won't get it back now. some key games this week. Look, I mean, if you're a Steelers fan, you obviously want Oakland to lose this week. It would be nice to the Chiefs have got to lose one of two. Why not this week? Perfect time for them to lose one or two. Outside shot, the Steelers. I wouldn't hold my breath on it, but, I mean, there's an outside shot that the Steelers can get the number two seed. And do you want them to have the number two seed and have that week off? It'd be nice. My biggest thing is just get a home playoff game and go from there, because I think anything could happen at that point. And, yeah, you obviously want to be able to play at home.
Yeah, even though the Chiefs have
Let me get my thought. I just regained it. When you think of Ike Taylor, what do you think of when you think about
Can't catch the football.
Right. You think about a guy that played a lot of off too, right?
Yeah. Ike was never a press guy.
Right. So why? Well,
the comparisons are just they look physically similar. That's it. Their body type is similar.
Right. I mean, where the hell is this narrative coming from?
That's exactly where it's coming from. They're physically similar size.
I mean, look, I understand Mike and Mike Wallace. If you're using Mike Wallace to give you cornerback comparisons and you want to stick by those, there you go. I mean, look, no offense to Ike Taylor. I mean, Ike Taylor was Ike Taylor, and you like your cornerbacks to be physical guys like that. But he, you know, look, already has three interceptions. And Ike Taylor, we might be talking about Ike Taylor being, a several snub. A Pro Bowler, and who knows, maybe a potential Hall of Fame if he caught half of the damn balls that hit him in the hands. But no way, shape, or form should anybody be comparing Artie Burns to Ike Taylor. Am I correct?
You know, it's what people do. So when they're looking at he has the potential to be a really good corner playing on the outside for the Steelers, that's what they're doing. But, yeah, I mean, I think generally you're correct, yes.
All right, carry on.
All right, well, let's get to our picks and, you know, injuries around the league. I think we've kind of discussed most of that. We can go through them here as the games go on. I got there by a point last night. I'm trying to close the gap here the last 2 weeks. I had the Eagles yesterday. I must only watch the Giants when they stink because Eli's just not good. I mean, period, he's not good. He missed Odell Beckham Jr. on the next to last offensive play that they had. He was open in the end zone. It would have taken a good throw, but you get $20 million, you're paid to make good throws when it matters. He didn't, and then he floated an interception, and the Giants lose. It was a game where the Eagles dominated early, and they got a pick six. But if I'm an NFC team and I get to pick my first-round opponent, I'm picking the Giants. I mean, that would be nirvana to play the Giants, particularly if the Giants are on the road, which they will be as the wild card. That would not scare me at all.
Get your pens and papers out. Let me make sure this recording's rolling here. I'm not a huge Eli Manning fan, okay, but just watching a lot of what the Giants do and some of the inconsistencies that they have had this year and a few people that they're missing right now, yada, yada. I want to see the Giants play the Cowboys in the second round of the playoffs, and I think the Giants can win that game on the road in Dallas. There you go.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that. I mean, I think they're a dangerous enough team that I think, and you know, they could end up playing the Lions in the first round and losing the wild card game just as easily. But I think they're kind of the team that people maybe you know have a blind eye to, so to speak. And I really would like, for my own fan NFL fan part of it, I would like to see Giants Cowboys second round of playoffs. I think that's a game the Giants can win. Carry on.
Okay, this week's games. Let's get it rolling. Skins at Bears, Skins -3. I'll take the Skins. Brutal loss for them on Monday night to Carolina. They need help.
Yeah, I think because this is a Kirk Cousins that can still get the ball down the middle of the field. Good air yards with him as well, too. Even though this is on the road, I'll take Washington lay those points.
You know, it's interesting. You're going to go into these last 2 weeks of the season, and neither the Ravens nor the Dolphins are going to be favored in either game they play. I assume. I don't know what New England's situation is going to be in week 17 at Miami, but the Dolphins won't be a significant favorite. They might be a point favorite or something. But the Bills are a 4.5-point favorite. I love Matt Moore. Everybody knows I love Matt Moore. But I want to see what happens when the Bills win their last two games and they go 9-7 and they're talking about firing Rex Ryan, because that's what's going to happen, and that might be what happens. Which would be insane. The league is better with Rex Ryan in it, in my view. Give me the Bills -4.5, even though I would never actually take that one to Vegas.
I like this game as well, too. I think I like this enough to talk to the man about. I like the Bills at home in this one as well. And I was thinking about this, you know, this morning with all these reports about Rex Ryan. Is 2 years And look, Doug Whaley should know more than anybody when it comes to this. Is 2 years enough for a coach to completely turn around the program, especially in that division?
Well, this is what I've said all along, is if you know you have the wrong guy because you made a bad hire, and that's how I view that. Within 2 years, if you know you have the wrong guy, you made a bad hire. Then you correct it.
Then they should have corrected it four games ago then.
Well, it is
my view, but I guess what I'm getting at is, look, I'm not a Rex Ryan fan here, but if you thought he was the guy a few years ago when you hired him, and now all of a sudden, I just don't see how you can think that he's all of a sudden the wrong guy, you know, right now. I guess what I'm trying to say is, in my opinion, he deserves a third year.
Okay, I agree. Tampa goes to New Orleans. This line's a little bit odd to me. Bucks are getting 3.5. I'll take the Bucks.
I'll take the Saints at home. This is their Super Bowl right now, I think. Give me the Saints at home.
Well, then it's the exact same scenario in this one. Atlanta goes to Carolina. Atlanta's -3 on the road. You're going to take Carolina at home because, you know, they want to punish the division champ?
Yeah, no, I can't do that. Matt Ryan's your MVP, plain and simple. I think he's going to get it done on the road. No reason to think that they won't cover on the road. Give me Atlanta. Cover those points.
I'll take Atlanta, too. And I think your point will be fair if they win this game. If they lose this game, he won't be the MVP. Packers -7 at home against the Vikes. Give me the Pack. They're playing great.
Oh, wow. I can't go against. Remember all those people that are writing off the Packers there several weeks ago, and here they are. Big game for them here. I don't see how they lose this one. I don't see how Minnesota can keep this close. Give me Packers to cover this at home.
Patriots -16.5. I don't know. 16.5. They beat them 40-0 probably. Give me the Pats.
Boy, that's a big number, isn't it? Huge number. The Patriots have been killing Vegas with these big numbers this year as well, too. I'm going to go. Look, the Jets aren't going to win this, but I think something happens. Maybe we have a fog bowl or something in this one. Jets, keep it close. Give me all those bunches of points.
Titans -5 on the road against the Jags. I'll take the Titans, and I hope they win the division.
Man, oh, man, here we are talking about the Dick LeBeau team probably going to get in the playoffs as well. They got a very similar defensive A in adjusted nets yards per passing attempt number as the Steelers do at this point of the year. Can Jacksonville rebound from the firing and all their problems to even make this close? I don't think so. Give me Tennessee to cover this on the road.
San Diego -4 at Cleveland. Seems ridiculously low. I don't think Cleveland's going to get the win, though. I'll take the Chargers.
Is Cleveland going to go winless this year? I mean, if...
Steelers better win, so it doesn't matter, because you don't want to be the team playing to make them 16-0.
You know what? If there was a game that maybe Cleveland can win, it's this one. I don't think they do, but I think they keep it a field goal. So give me Cleveland at home plus the points.
Oakland at home against the Colts -3.5. This is a huge game. I don't have any idea what to make of what Indy did to Minnesota last week, so I'll just pretend it didn't happen and take the Raiders.
It's a big, big game for the Colts. Huge, huge game. A little bit less so for Oakland, who's in now. Go Colts, go Luck. I think Indianapolis wins this one's outright, so give me those points.
Rams -4.5 against the Niners. This may be the... Nobody may watch. This might be 0-0 on the watch meter. Give me the Niners +4.5.
Give me the Rams to cover this one at home.
Arizona goes to Seattle -7.5. That seems too big. Seattle's been really good at home and terrible on the road. But I'll say Arizona with pride keeps this close.
Yeah, I will as well. I think Arizona... Look, they're not going to quit on Bruce Arians. This one will be close. I think Seattle wins this one, but I think Arizona keeps it close, so give me those points.
Christmas Eve night, the Texans minus one with the Bengals. A.J. Green, they say A.J. Green's going to play.
So is okay. Tom Savage is going to get to start. What is this? I knew Osweiler was a horrible signing by Houston. But look, if you have to go through that, I guess, to find out, maybe you got a guy in Tom Savage. All that said, Cincinnati's winning this one on the road.
I'll take the Texans to make that South really interesting. Sunday night, Christmas night, Sunday night, right? The Broncos and the Chiefs, huge game again for both these teams. I said 3 weeks ago the Broncos would lose out. I'll stay with it. Give me the Chiefs minus 3.5.
Boy, it's hard to go against the Chiefs right now, isn't it? They just play that small ball. They let their defense get out there and do what they need to do. And that, you know, that's how they beat you. And I think that's how they're going to beat Denver on Christmas night. And unfortunately, the Steelers need Kansas City to lose one of these games. And I'm afraid that it's not going to happen here. Give me Kansas City to cover this one at home against the Broncos.
And, okay, Dave.
No, I'm sorry. That is Christmas night. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Steelers-Ravens, 4:30 Sunday. And just a little quick plug here. I will obviously be on the postgame show with Charlie, and then I will be doing Sports Showdown live at 11:30 on Christmas night. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, when you settle in, you know, I'll be around. I'll take you all through the second half of your Christmas.
Detroit and Dallas. Get that one before we get to Steelers.
Oh, sorry. Did I miss it? When is that? How did I miss that?
That's Monday night, right?
Oh, sorry. The Monday night game. Okay, sorry. Dallas minus 6.5. Give me the Lions. Dallas wins, but I'll take the points.
Yeah, I'm with you. Give me Dallas to win this one. Give me the Lions plus the points.
Okay, Steelers-Ravens, 4:30 Sunday. Merry Christmas to all our listeners. I think the Steelers win this game, and I think they win it comfortably. Give me the Steelers 31-16.
I don't like it that big, but I like the 16 that you have for Baltimore, and that's what I have written down here as well, too. I like Steelers to win this one by 8. They're gonna win it 24-16, and they're gonna get that 24 the hard way in this one as well, too. Three touchdowns, three 2-point conversions in this one, David. That'll shut everybody up about them not getting the 2-point conversions, as of late here. But really, I think they really match up good in this game. I think they win this one at home, and I think they cover that. What are you showing? 5.5 on this one?
5.5.
Yeah, I like them to cover it at very least, and hopefully we're talking on Monday about the Steelers being the AFC North champions, and then kind of figuring out all the math that goes along with what they need and don't need to happen in week 17 as well. And let's see, give our boy Craig one more plug before we start getting out of here.
Yes, Steeler fans, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through the daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Baltimore. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right.
Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. A lot of great emails coming in lately from our listeners. Keep that up as well, too. We don't get to all of them on the air, but we try to read and respond as many of them as we can. At least one of us we'll normally try to. And if you want to donate right before Christmas here, you can do so. Go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that PayPal button up top. Thank you for everybody who has donated throughout and made this show stay alive once again in 2016. And Merry Christmas to everybody. Thanks for listening. And, David, with that, I'll let you get us out of here.
And Merry Christmas to you, Dave, and to all our listeners. Thanks again for the fantastic support throughout the season. And hopefully you get a steal and win under your tree. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.